Chasing China.
Ni hao and welcome back everyone to Chasing China. I'm Zara, your host and guide through the mesmerizing journey of expat life in Beijing. Whether you're a seasoned expat, considering a move, or simply curious about life in China, this podcast is here to offer you a front row seat to see what it's truly like to live, work, and thrive in Beijing. But before we dive into today's episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss out on the exciting and valuable insights our guests have to offer. Now, without further ado, let's get started on another adventure of Chasing China. In today's episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with Shanat, another beautiful Mexican soul who already lived in Beijing a few years ago and worked at the international clinic. After leaving China for 1 year, she's back now in Beijing with her husband this time. We'll be discussing her experiences working in China, how things have changed since then, and the challenges of job hunting here. So welcome to Chasing China.
Thank you, Sarah.
So let's get started. I start every interview with a funny little game. I will throw out a word or phrase related to China, and you have to share the first thing that comes to your mind. You got it?
Okay, I got it.
Okay, so Chinese favorite food?
Pan-fried dumplings.
Job hunting in China?
Difficult.
What your family gets wrong about China?
Oh, that they eat everything. And I mean, they kind of do, but, you know, like these stereotypical things about they eat rats and they eat scorpions and everything. Like, I haven't seen any of that here.
Okay, healthcare in China?
Depends. If you don't have like a good insurance, then you need to speak Chinese. If you have an insurance, like really easy, super easy.
And last but not least, coffee culture in Beijing.
They don't like anything bitter. Everything sweet.
Okay, good to know. So you lived and worked in Beijing before. When was that and why? What did you do?
Yes. So a little bit of myself. I am a doctor. So I came here to work with an international clinic. I mean, this clinic is Chinese, but they started in London, actually. But they have like the CEO is Chinese. So I came with that. I did aesthetics for a while. It was supposed to be for 3 years, but because it was during COVID, during the pandemic, things in China got crazy. So I had to leave. Like the clinic where I was working closed and they moved me abroad.
So how many years in total you stayed here?
I stayed not even 1 year. I stayed 6 months in Beijing the first time.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's a short time. And afterwards, where did you go?
After that, I went to New York with the same company because, as I said, it's international. So they could relocate me to New York. I was there for a whole year, but now I came back.
Yes, and I'm wondering, why did you come back?
Okay, that's a good one. Long story short, on my previous stay in China, I met who is now my husband. So when I left, we kept in touch and everything led to another thing. So we said like a long distance relationship wasn't for us. So I had to prioritize like if I wanted to be with him, if we wanted to be together, then I made the decision at that time to come back because it was supposed to be easier for me to move and find a job and do what I was doing here. I mean, I had already worked here, so it just seemed easier. And at that time, because of his job, he was not able to move. So yeah, it was just like conscious and for love.
Yeah, so the most important reason. So very good. So later, we will dive into your job situation a little bit more. But first, how has your return to the city been after 1 year? And have you noticed any significant changes? And also, how does it feel to be back, especially with your husband now?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I arrived in Beijing during COVID time. So the first time I arrived, I had to do quarantine, you know. I stayed 2 weeks in a quarantine hotel. Then after, I moved to another hotel, which was like a 7 days of a less cautious quarantine. But the city, Beijing, everything seemed not like a big city. Like you had to scan a QR code for everything, a lot of places. People in the subway, at that time it was good because people in the subway didn't come to your personal space. You know, they were actually a little bit afraid of foreigners, which is another topic. But the city was not as open as when I came now. So the difference within the city when I first lived here and when I came back was like, wow, like, okay, now this is China. And now you could see the million of people walking. What you see on TV and everything, like your whole expectation of China, it just was like, wow, mind-blowing. And I mean, I came from New York, but I was not expecting this on my return, which was great, actually. Like now you get to go to all the places free. I mean, free in a sense, no, like you don't have to scan a QR code or wear a mask everywhere. It's really nice. The difference. And now living with my husband, of course, like now I don't feel alone in China, right? When I first came, I came without knowing anyone, like literally no one. And I was working in a Chinese clinic. So this clinic, it was just my translator and the nurse at the clinic. So we were 3 people there, 2 of them Chinese. And don't know, like you have already talked about WeChat a little bit. So through these WeChat groups, it was easier to get to know people and to get in contact with them. But now that I came back, I already had friends here, which made life so much easier. And of course, my husband, at that time when I came, was my boyfriend that we got married. Now I have to get used to calling him husband. But of course, it was much, much better experience. This time, I already knew the city. And I mean, now I get to the apartment and now I can feel like I am at home. Whether previously it was like, okay, I get to my apartment, but now I have nothing there. And it's a much more fulfilling experience.
Yes, I guess it's always nice to share these kinds of experiences with someone, especially someone you love. So again, congratulations to your marriage, also to your lucky husband, Jens. Hello. And yes, maybe for the listeners who don't know what Shanat mean by scanning a QR code, during COVID, you had to test like almost every day, I guess. I think when you wanted to go to visit certain places, you had to show your QR code and show that you were tested negative. Is that right?
Yes. So it was not since the beginning. I mean, when I arrived, this was not the policy. The only policy that was in the city was like you had to scan the QR code in every place, like through WeChat, you scan the QR code in every place.
So to show where you are so that they can track you in case you get positive.
Yeah. Or in case someone else gets positive, then they knew where you were. And if you were in close contact with these people that, or with this person that got positive, then they could track who was there and then you would get quarantined again at home. Or if you tested positive, then in a hospital. Luckily, it was never my case, but I had friends. They were really unlucky. Every 2-3 weeks, they got quarantined for a week or for 2 weeks or something like that. But yeah, as I said, luckily, was not my case. But then it got to a point that the government were requiring you to do tests every 48 hours. Every 48 hours, you had to have like a QR code in green, which meant that you were tested and you were negative. If you didn't have this green QR code or if you didn't got your test, then they wouldn't let you in anywhere. Like it didn't matter if you had fever or not or had any symptoms. You couldn't just do it. Like you had to have a test if you wanted to get into a restaurant. I mean, I know there was a time where the restaurants were closed and every public space was closed. I wasn't here for that. Actually, that's when they moved me. I escaped the really hard part of COVID in Beijing because I know it was not the same situation in the whole China. Like Shanghai got really crazy lockdown. I think Shenzhen as well. I don't know about other provinces or cities in China, but at least Beijing, it never got to a point of the full city quarantine. But yes, it started to look crazy, and then that's why they made the decision to close the clinic, hopefully with a reopening, but that never happened.
Okay, very interesting. And maybe a funny side story with the QR codes. I heard from other expats here that, you know, I already explained that with WeChat Pay, you pay almost everything. So when you go to a grocery store and you buy something, then they know that you were at the grocery store because you paid with your QR code, right? So when there was somebody tested positive, so they tracked everybody down who was with them in the supermarket. So that was a very crazy thing to hear. But let's go back to something you mentioned before, that in the subway, foreigners were afraid of Chinese. Why was that?
Yeah, I mean, no, foreigners weren't scared of Chinese. Chinese were a little bit afraid of foreigners. Inside China was like foreigners were bringing COVID because like China was in this zero policy of COVID, like free of COVID. So when you get into the subway or into an elevator, before in this COVID time, Chinese people were a little bit afraid of you. They were believing all the news that they had on TV, so they stepped away, or they didn't even get into the elevator with you just because they were like, no, maybe this random foreigner is carrying COVID into China. Like, I mean, crazy stories. Now I wished it was a little bit like those times, because it's a huge population. Like, you really now don't have a sense of personal space when you are traveling public, especially like in rush hours. Of course, it's not everywhere like that, but like we live at least in a part of the city where you have to take like the, I would say is the most transited subway line. So to get to our subway station, there's always a lot of people, even not in rush hours. It doesn't matter. It's always full of people. Yeah. But China is super big, millions of people just in the capital city.
Yes, definitely a huge city. So as someone familiar with both, so Mexican and Chinese culture, what cultural adjustments have you found necessary in daily life, but also when it comes to the work environment?
Okay, related to the work environment, I tend to be, as my personality, and I think also part of the Latin culture, I tend to be like really soft when I'm talking to patients, like in my case, right? I deal with patients. So when I'm talking to them, I tend to be really like soft, and in Spanish, I talk a lot of like really short and cute ways to say something because I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Like, I deal with aesthetics. So of course, when they come to me, they are like, okay, what do you think I should improve? And I don't want to be rude and to say like, basically like, you're ugly. Of course not. Like, I want to give them a sense of confidence. But in China, I had to adjust that. Like, they like tough love. If they come to me, they come with the idea that I'm gonna tell you need this and you need that, and like, you should improve definitely this. Like, you really, really need it. For me, that is really tough. I was not used to that. In Mexico, at least, this will cost me a lot of money. Like, people would not come back like this rude doctor. But here is like crazy. They will come back just because I don't know if they feel like you're telling them the truth or they want to hear that. Of course, people are different and not everyone is the same, because I also experienced this differences with the same Chinese people, but in New York, they were not as difficult patients as here in China. Like, in New York, I could be more myself with them because they were, I guess, more influenced by American culture. Yeah, so I could be a little bit more like myself in United States, but here in China, no, like, they are totally different patients. I had to adjust these little things, because if not, like, they were not coming back. Yeah, I want to be professional and I want to not oversell things, because my job wasn't like in the selling part, right? So But of course, I need to tell them some improvements or something. But yes, I try to make everything sweeter. But that's a huge, huge difference. And I think the biggest one that I can think right now.
Okay, I did not expect that because I thought we German tend to be very direct with our communication, but that the Chinese people really want to have direct feedback from a doctor, directly hear what they have to improve is very, interesting. And what is also interesting is that in another episode, I talked with Stephanie and she's having her own company here. And we also talked a little bit about consumer behaviors, that really what people want here are different things. So we talked about parenting and education, like their needs and what people are used to here is very different. And what came into my mind is that Stephanie told us that in China, also in the education system, people are used to other people telling them how to do something. So in China, at least in my perception, there's like one way and this is the only right way. And maybe for your patient, it is the same because they want to know what to do. So receiving this information from you, like you have to improve that, you have to do this, gives them the security in doing what they do. And maybe they feel comfortable with this.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking about that before, about the whole educational system that is behind. But yes, of course, like that influences what they have in their mind. Like, if I go to this doctor, then she has to tell me what I have to do and what is the right path. So yeah, that's a really good insight. But see, like everything is connected, like the educational system that it's running behind them, the family values that are behind them, because it's also like really tough. Yeah, really tough for them. It's my way of perceiving these things. Like moms especially are like the ones telling you like, you should do this. Like you are not as pretty as you should be. And I mean, China's faces you can see all over around here, sometimes they all look the same, and not just because they are Asians, just because they all want to look the same. Their beauty standard is like really just one, and they want that and they want to achieve that. So until you tell them, okay, this is how you can do it, I think, yeah, that's the reasoning.
Yes, and as we said, a lot of these cultural things are connected. And maybe in this topic, also the Chinese people prefer some directness. And yeah, talking about beauty standards. So I know that, for example, having very white skin is something Chinese people like and find very beautiful. So can you tell us or give us a little bit more insights about Chinese beauty needs and behaviors?
So one of the first differences with us and them, it's how they want their nose to look like. Normally in Western culture, I always tend to correct the nose, but because some Westerns have like this bump in the nose, you know, and Chinese, they have like a really flat nose. So they want to get more nose, like they want to simulate like they have a higher bone, which for me was like, why do you want, like, I think their noses look really good, but no, they want to appear like a higher, they have a higher nose. Okay, like, it's doable. I can do that. They also want like really, really pointy chins. Like they want this triangle chin. They hate like this hollowness that you get like from your cheekbone into the cheek. I love how this hollow looks because like, for me, it's like, okay, it looks a little bit more stylish and everything, but they don't want that. They want like a baby face, like a huge round in the cheeks baby face, but then ending with a pointy chin. Completely new for me. They want their calves to look slimmer. Like they want to be really, really slim, but they want their calves to look slimmer. So that was a new technique for me to be able to reduce the calf with Botox. They want to be really, really pale, like not just white, pale. And they have a lot of brightening stuff. The brightening treatments, I think that those are one of the most common requests. They really protect their faces against sun. Like here, summer is really funny because they go out full face covered. I don't know, it just looks weird. In summer, you don't see faces. You just see like a lot of umbrellas. But right now, I think those are the things that I could think about. they just want to be slim. They want to look 10 times younger than they are. They don't like aging at all. Like, I know, like, a lot of people don't like aging, no? That's why Botox exists and anti-wrinkle products and whatever. But I think it's about aging gracefully. But they don't want to age at all, like, at all. And this is reinforced by all this manga culture. Like, I mean, I know this is not Japan, but anime also, and Korea's culture with the K-pop, it's influencing a lot. So sometimes they just want to look like a cartoon, which, okay, open my eyes. But me as a doctor, I have to also take in consideration what they want and how they want to look like. And I had a lot of like experience like learning these new techniques. So yeah, I learned a lot from these new approaches that I had to have. Really a fulfilling experience, which of course, like all the knowledge that you can get, right? So then you can put it on practice. I loved it working here.
Yes, and that's the great thing about living and working in another country. You get new perspectives, but also skills, like you said. And I totally get it. That all must have been a huge adjustment for you, because as far as I know, in most of the Latin countries, these ideals are very different. So for example, having dark skin and a curvy body is seen as very beautiful. So it's crazy how different these beauty standards can be across countries. And to get back to something you already mentioned, the beauty products like sunscreen or body lotion, they have whitening things in it. So for us, it was very hard to find a good sunscreen at the beginning. And now we always ask people to bring it for us from Germany. So maybe a nice side note for people who are traveling to China, bring your sunscreen. So now that we are already talking about your work and work experience, can you share with us your experience working in China in general? Maybe a few words to that.
Okay, the first time I worked here, I loved it. I loved the experience. I loved getting to know all these differences, work on my skills, improving my skills, getting new skills. I just love everything surrounding it. I like the city, I liked the people, I liked my friends. I mean, I met my husband at that time. So all this was influencing my work and my life here. Of course, this time it's a little bit more complicated than that. Whether it's really fulfilling on the like personal life, and I'm here with my husband, which I love. I got to meet new friends than the ones that I previously had. Now the challenge of working again has been more difficult. I came with an idea, I think also because I was working already here, like, okay, it's gonna be super easy because I already worked here. I had the experience. I know the people. I know the techniques. I thought, okay, easy peasy. But no. Like, the challenge now is that before I was working with a translator and I don't speak Chinese. I mean, I'm learning, but it's not a language that you are going to say, okay, I am really fluent and I can speak and I can read and I can write. Not in 1 year. And so the language barrier is one challenge that I have constantly when I'm looking for jobs, because the previous clinic, as I said, was investing in a translator. Now, clinics that I talk to, like in the fields of aesthetics and cosmetics, is like, okay, really good, your whole experience, blah, blah, blah. But do you speak Chinese? And like, okay, no. And okay, then like these Chinese clinics, like we just have Chinese clients, we just have Chinese patients that come here. So you need to speak Chinese to communicate with them. And there's not like an investment for a translator as I previously had. This is from the aesthetic side of my career, but I studied medicine. So I'm still trying, but it's been some months that I have been trying to get into like the hospital field, to be like a family medicine doctor, because I also have the experience in my home country of taking care of patients, hospitalized patients, and just like a first contact doctor, even in emergency room. But because I already had like a license on the cosmetology, every time I go to an interview on international hospitals, it's like, okay, really good and everything. You speak English, you speak Spanish, but I'm not sure if I can change your previous license to now a general license to practice general medicine. Like everything in China is policies, policies, policies. So I even had to go to this bureau to ask, can you do this? Is it possible to change from one license to another one? And I already got like, yes, it's possible. Just a hospital has to do this process because the way like medicine in China for foreign doctors works is like you have a temporary doctor's license. And this temporary doctor's license is linked to the clinic or hospital that you are working for. So it's not like you can go to the health department and say, hey, I'm a doctor. I want to have like a license and to practice by my own. No. Beijing is limited on the international hospital. So like we know about a few, like four international hospitals in my research now, like that I am applying to. But also a challenge with this is the HR process system. I sent tons of CVs I send a lot of resumes to these HR emails that I get or HR WeChat contacts or however I can get these contacts. I send my resume and there's no feedback. Like no one replies to you. No one tells you, okay, we received your CV or your resume, but we don't have any open positions or you are not a good fit here or whatever. Like you get nothing back, like no feedback at all. So I think that's one really frustrating part in this job hunting process.
Okay, so you already started to talk about your job searching experience. I wanted to ask you, how is it going so far? So you already gave us some insights, especially the HR process. So I think in general, just to wrap it up, what you said is one of the challenges here in China, because I can also relate to that because I'm also on a job hunt right now. Or me, luckily I found a job, but I was on a job hunt for several months. And one of the most annoying things is that when you apply for something, 9 of 10 cases, you don't get anything back, no response, no thank you, no, we received your application, nothing. And that can be very demotivating. And even when you get an answer, the problem is that the HR process are very slow and very complicated. And often some people tell you, no, that's not possible. For example, your license, I think it's very similar to the working permit in general. You have to have it in order to work here. So some people told you, oh no, we cannot change the license. Then you ask another person. This person tells you, yes, we can change the license. So what I learned at the end is that in China, everything is possible. You just have to fight for it and don't accept a no. So is there something else you could add? What is different here? And also difficult here to find a job, because I think most people think, yeah, you just apply for 100 of jobs and then you will get a job, no problem. You just have to put effort and time in. But could you like explain to listeners who are not living in China what is the problem?
I think HR is, as I have already talked about it, not receiving any feedback is one problem. But then when you get to the interview, they tell you like everything is fine. And then you get to like stages and they hold you for months. Like, yes, it's happening. Yes, it's happening. For sure it's happening. Then there's a point like they don't reply to your text message. Like, okay, what happened here? Or they take weeks to reply to you. And it's like, oh, I'm so sorry that I didn't reply to you earlier. But you know, like the company or the hospital made the decision to not hire any other foreign doctor or whatever the story is. But they already put you on hold and you were all excited thinking about it. Like, yes, I got it. Like the first time it was really like a bump, really frustrating, demotivated, as you said, just like not a nice feeling. Some people might say like, okay, but why didn't you in the meanwhile looked for another thing? It's like, yes, you are right. But also in the meanwhile, at least in my case, my husband is German. So it's like, okay, then I have another activity to focus on because I don't speak German. So, okay, get into the languages or do another thing. Meanwhile, this comes because they already told you yes, and you are not expecting other thing than this. But lesson learned. So next time, whenever someone tells me yes, I don't take it for granted because it had happened again, twice. So yes, lesson learned. That was my fault, if someone wants to call it like that, because you should not rely on other people's word when there's nothing written. Yeah, learned it the hard way, but now it's like a knowledge. And it's like this for a lot of things. So, okay, the next thing, life goes on and you have to continue your look and your search. If you really want it, then you just have to continue searching for that. As you said, like in China, everything is possible. Yes. If someone tells you no, okay, like go for the next person. But the language barrier does take a huge part into this. They don't know how to handle a foreigner. They don't know what to do. What are the specifications, the regulations for foreigners? They're like lost. And it doesn't just happen in a company. It happens in a lot of topics. I can tell you, like, we can be talking here for hours how I have been fighting Chinese. So many stories, but I think we would go into a rabbit hole.
Yes, exactly. And like everything in life, it's a learning curve, right? So with every step on the way and every challenge you encounter, you learn from it and go on. And same for me. I am always a bit naive, and with the time I realized that I should not take someone's words for granted. And regarding the language barrier, like Sasha said in our first episode, even though you have translation apps or a translator, you have to be patient and put a lot of time and effort in it. Because as you said, some people are overwhelmed. You know, they don't know to handle processes. And when Chinese people don't know how to handle it, they tend to say no. So then you have to be patient and put more time and effort in it. And as you said, then you end up spending one entire day in a office to get one answer, one yes or no. So that can be very frustrating. And coming back to the relying thing, because you know that I also had a very hard time finding a job here. And yeah, I definitely learned not to rely on the first thing people tell you, even when they're not Chinese people. So I got the job approval even before I came to China. And I was very happy, you know, waiting for the next step in the whole HR process. Okay, I have to wait a little bit, and then there's the next step, and then I wait a little bit, and there's the next step. And for 6 months, this person reassured me that I get the job and that we will start this HR process soon and soon and soon. And like 6 and 7 months passed by. And then you get to know from other people that someone else has the job, which is very interesting, because normally I would like to hear that from the person who gave me the job in the first place, right? So yeah, relying on people's words is not the best thing here, at least. But it is a learning curve, and you just have to be consistent in what you're doing and fighting for what you want. And now I'm very happy to say that I found a job with a very great manager, and I'm very thankful for that, that after the whole fighting, I finally will be working. Of course, we still have to wait if it works, if I get the working permit, but I found a job and we did start the HR process, and that's already a very great thing. So it's also like Deanna told us, you have to fight for what you want and hopefully you will get it at the end. So yeah, you already mentioned contacts here. So job hunting often involves networking. So what strategies have you found effective in building professional connections in Beijing?
Well, one way is just literally through friends, right? Like there's always the person that knows someone that can help you. And in order to make friends, I had already talked a little bit about the WeChat. And in WeChat, there are like a lot of groups for everything. And even if it's just like in your community, I mean, me as a Latin, to be honest, I just tend to hang around like Latin people, Latin community. And a lot of them are like really hardworking women. So they work in hospitals, they work in clinics or something. And through them, I was able to get like some email for HR, because things in China, they don't work the same as the Western world. Like you go normally into a web page of a hospital in your country outside China and you are gonna find like, okay, be part of our team and contact us and something, like you are gonna find a direct email. But in China, no. In China, you have like the mini programs that sometimes are in Chinese, and most of the times they don't have like an email to contact them. So you get these contacts through a friend, through people that you know they are working there, or just literally going to the hospital and ask in the desk from, do you have HR contact for the hospital? I'm a doctor. I am looking for a job opportunity. And there haven't been one time that they have denied it. They always give me the email to contact directly HR and everything. But the thing that I come back again to is like, they don't reply to you. And so I have sent, I don't know how many times, my CV to the same email, like 5 times, 6 times, but no reply. Just in a few, because I have gotten some interviews. So in a few of these hospitals, they have give me feedback of, or they have reached out to me. But as you say, like 9 out of 10 cases, it is like that. But I have a friend, she's from Costa Rica, and she speaks perfect Chinese, like perfect. So she's my go-to for everything. I mean, she's my best friend here, but also my go-to, because I asked her one time, like, can you go with me to this clinic? Because it was a Chinese clinic for aesthetics, but the clinic was huge. So she went with me. She asked in the front desk, like, my friend, she's a doctor. Can you give me a contact in case she can apply for here? And this lady told her about one app that Chinese people use for job hunting. So this app is called Boss, like B-O-S-S. And it's like a LinkedIn for China. I created my profile, everything. I have been getting so many like already requests and everything, but I come again to the language barrier. So I can speak a little bit of Chinese and type a little bit of Chinese. So when I say like, okay, do you speak English or can we continue in WeChat, because WeChat has this translating option in the chats, then they stop replying or they send a message. Like, I think it's like an automatic message in the app saying like, oh, I hope your job hunting goes well. See you. And that's it. It's overwhelming to be in this app because then it's a constant translation. Like, take a screenshot, go to your translator app, translate the text, and then type what you want to say. It's a little bit overwhelming. It has been proving some fruit. Like, I have already gotten a little bit of contacts from that. But still, everything is pending. You have to, at the beginning, rely on just HR people. Because apparently that's how China works. How Chinese people apply for like a job is through this app. But you have to have like these kind of friends that can go with you and can speak Chinese and can communicate with the other people and then translating everything to you. In this case, it's much more easier because then she can translate in Spanish, our native language, and then we don't get lost in translations, because that's also a thing. Like, when you speak more than 2 languages, then you have like to translate this language maybe to English and then maybe to Spanish. And a lot gets lost in these translations.
Yes, and that is crazy and really eye-opening that language plays such a crucial role in all of this, especially in China. And coming back to the networking thing, what you told us shows very good how important these kinds of contacts are. You really need people that can help you and have the skill that you need. And it's the same Stephanie told us in the episode about her business. Knowing the right people is everything here. So, yeah, but it's great to hear that you have such a great friend and fluent in Chinese. That's a game changer, of course. So I think with all this, we could give already a good insight into job hunting here. And I hope we could show that finding a job here as a spouse, so as a partner, is not so easy as some people might think. But speaking about spouses, for other spouses navigating the job market in Beijing and looking for a job, what advice would you give to them?
The first thing, don't rely on other people, or just if you have like, yes, I give you my word. No, it's not happening just like that. That was a really bad mistake at the beginning from me. Go by yourself. I think I was also scared at the beginning to just go and ask in a hospital, can you give me an email? And shout out to my husband, because he's the one always pushing me, like, go there. He gives me like a lot of outside insights and a lot of outside perspective. So also listen maybe to your spouse, talk to your friends about this, because sometimes like Sarah and me, like you are getting through the same process, and then it's like a relief when you talk to another person and that can comprehend and then that can feel what you are feeling or what you went through or what you are going through still. Yeah, so you don't feel alone. You don't feel alone in this process. Friends and a strong partner, it's like, I think, a base for this job hunting as a spouse. If you already come with the job, then that's great. Like, it takes a lot of effort from you. But if not, like, also, don't give up at the first failure. Don't give up after the first no, because they are gonna come like 3, 4, 5, 10 no's. And there's always the next one, and there's always the next one, which was also a hard lesson for me. I wasn't used to this system, to be honest. In Mexico, I already knew the system. I already knew how to apply. I already knew what job interview was like. And I came here all confident from my previous experience. And then it's like, okay, I slide down. But everything is gonna work through. I know it. Beijing is so big. There's a ton of activities to do. I think one day we were talking about this, like when family asks, what are you doing the whole day? I am busy. Either is going to these interviews, either is going to meet a friend for a coffee, which is gonna turn into 4 or 5 hours talking. But it's a way that your mind is clearing, enrolling another activity. Like Beijing has so many activities. I met my best friend in tennis, which I had never practiced tennis before in my life. But one day I said, like, I'm gonna go to tennis classes because that seemed like something for fun to do. I met her there, and since then, she has been helping me a lot. I met Sarah through a Latin community. She's German, but she's amazing with Spanish, by the way. So it's fun to meet this kind of people, and it's fun to have like another points of view and insights. Like, they help you grow as a person, and you can learn from everything, from every situation, whether it's good, whether it's bad, just take it as knowledge.
Great, thank you for the advice. I would have used that 6 months ago. Well, okay. So, looking ahead, what are your aspirations or plans for the future in Beijing or beyond, both professionally and personally? So I guess your goal is to finally get a job here.
Yes, like this is still, it's gonna continue to be the goal here, not just because of the expectation of maybe people, because I think expectation of people and your surroundings plays a lot of an important part into you and into your mindset, but also because I want to, like, I've been working since I graduated college, and I'm gonna keep pursuing this until I know something is gonna happen and something is gonna open. There are a million opportunities. I just have to find the right one, and it's gonna come. But for the future, because my husband is here as an expat and he has a long contract. So until then, we're going to be in Beijing. And then who knows what life gets to us. But so far, we're just trying to enjoy life here. China is huge for opportunities to travel, whether it's like outside China or inside China. It's amazing. So we're going to enjoy. I'm going to try to find a job, hopefully come soon, but it's like life.
Well, thank you for joining us today and sharing your thoughts. But before we say goodbye, I have one final question that I'll ask every guest on this podcast. So if, after your time in China, you were to return to your home country or another place, what aspect, habit, or behavior will you bring with you?
I think it would be getting out of my comfort zone, being more open to meet new people, because I think back in my home country, I already had established my group friend, right? Like, my friends were the same from high school, from college, and that's the only way I used to meet people, or at work. But here, I would like to go back to Mexico and be a little bit like in Beijing, like in China, like being open to meet much more people. Like, I'm from Mexico City, and it's really international, but before here, like, I had no friends from other nationalities, and coming here, exploring new mindsets, new cultures. It has opened my mind a lot, and I think that's a thing that I would like to continue doing.
Okay, so thank you so much. It has been a pleasure to have you here as my guest on Chasing China.
Thank you for inviting me, Sarah. It was really fun. Thank you again for having me, and congratulations for your job. I didn't get to say that before.
Thank you so much, Shanat. And yeah, let's see if everything works out. So see you next time. Once again, thanks for joining Chasing China. Subscribe to stay updated and stay tuned for more adventures. Until then, Zai Jian and happy chasing. I want to remind you that everything shared on this podcast is based on my own opinions, experiences, and perspectives. I don't want to judge or impose my views on anyone. Every journey is unique, and I appreciate you being a part of mine. Thanks again, and see you next time. Take care.